From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Bubble Park City College.
South San Francisco.
Downtown.
ATL.
Pittsburgh.
P-World.
Oakland. Corona Heights, San Francisco.
Coming up, the San Quentin Prison Report takes us to a one-of-a-kind sporting event.
I feel like a kid in a candy store right now. You know, I get a chance to just really just play the game I love, man, and give it all and leave it on the field.
Then we'll hear about living with HIV behind bars.
I actually seen people shoot somebody else's blood inside him to get HIV. I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy.
And we'll meet an inmate who cares for elderly and disabled prisoners.
I can't begin to explain what it feels like to sit there with somebody and you can see the frustration on their face that they're forgetting stuff, that, you know what I mean, they're able to acknowledge that their mind is slipping.
Stories from the San Quentin Prison Report coming up next on Cross Currents. Today we're bringing you stories from the San Quentin Prison Report, KALW's collaboration with inmates making radio from inside of California's oldest prison.
The San Quentin Prison Report.
SQPR is a media collective of prisoners and volunteers from the community working together to give voice to personal growth, social transformation, and restorative justice.
Oh, good hit! Good hit!
When most of us think about baseball, we might imagine the game being played in parks and schoolyards or in stadiums, but we might not expect to see a game being played inside of prison walls.
Oh, good hit!
That's a homer!
That's out of here! Oh, let's go!
San Quentin has two teams, the San Quentin Athletics and the San Quentin Giants. Last May, a professional minor league team, the San Rafael Pacifics, came to San Quentin to play hardball against an all-star team of prisoners. Even though the players come from different circumstances, they all have one thing in common, the love of the game, as you can tell from these San Quentin players.
I started in T-ball, I think, around 6 or 7.
I've been playing baseball since I was about 3 years old. Started off in T-ball.
I mean, really, man, this brings back to my childhood. You know, I feel like I'm, you know, 8 years old again.
I've been playing baseball my entire life.
And now, SQPR's Tommy Shakur Ross takes us out to the San Quentin ballpark.
Beautiful day for baseball here at San Quentin.
When you walk in, the first thing you see is a palm tree. Wasn't expecting that.
That's San Rafael Pacifics player Colin Allen. The palm tree he's referring to is located in the direction of center field, slightly beyond the field of play in San Quentin's lower yard. It's called the Field of Dreams. It was given that name because it was a dream come true for the prisoners who were allowed to construct a baseball diamond and play hardball in prison.
We're in prison, and we're playing baseball.
Two wooden plaques are on the backstop in front of the baseball diamond. One reads, home of the San Quentin Athletics. The other, home of the San Quentin Giants. San Quentin's Field of Dreams is also in print atop a green and white scoreboard in the vicinity of right field. The playing field is enclosed within a fence without bleachers, and nearby gun towers oversee the entire prison yard. A game like this has never happened before. It's the start of baseball season, and the Pacifics are here to play the San Quentin All-Stars. The All-Stars are the prison's best players, handpicked from the San Quentin Giants and the San Quentin Athletics. Elliot Smith is the head coach for the Giants.
The way we selected the All-Stars was based on their performance for the entire season.
John Yaya Parrott is the head coach for the Athletics.
The 8 players that the San Quentin A's put together and 8 players that the San Quentin Giants put together, it turns out to be a very talented team.
This isn't the average prison sporting event. A cameraman from a local TV station, KTVU, and radio broadcasters and commentators are here.
Nice to see the players out on the field congratulating each other and standing in line and giving each other high fives. This is what sports is like.
The atmosphere is charged with good cheer, high energy, and excitement. There's an outline of chalk on the field and about 400 spectators who are predominantly prisoners. But there are approximately 50 outside guests, including a few women that arrived with the Pacifics organization. They all are mingling and interacting with the prisoners. Some onlookers are positioned behind the backstop in both dugouts and standing behind the fence in the direction of first and third base. Others are watching from the back fence in the outfield. The game starts with an opening ceremony. the players are lining up on the baselines and removing their caps for a prisoner's rendition of the national anthem. The teams acknowledge God through prayer.
And we just pray, God, that you would give us the right attitude, the right frame of mind.
And then Lieutenant Sam Robinson, San Quentin's public information officer, throws out the ceremonial first pitch. Next, the Pacifics and the All-Stars take to the field with their game faces on.
And the 1-2 pitch. And there's a swing and a high fly ball to center field. That should be a routine play as Chris Marshall backs up and makes the catch in left center field for the first out of the ballgame.
The game gets off to an exciting start. But today is about more than winning or losing. It's about the love of the game. Here's Pacific second baseman Kendall Price.
Playing a game like baseball, to me, is a game that really mimics life. So it feels really good, man, to be in here and to be with other guys that love the game like you do. You know what I mean? And to see the joy and appreciation they get out of being able to come out here and step on this field every day.
San Quentin's all-star second baseman, Christopher Smith, says for him, this is a day of great significance.
It's monumental because this never happened before. San Quentin having an all-star game, you know, the best player in the prison or whatever playing against, you know, these dudes right here, which is supposed to be like a minor league team, you know what I'm saying?
Pacific's player Ross Pomerantz expresses a similar sentiment.
It's the opportunity of a lifetime. I don't know how many guys are going to get to say they came in here and played baseball, you know, at San Quentin. This is the type of thing you tell your grandkids, you know, your kids, your family members. I mean, this is a story right here. This is much bigger than just going out and playing baseball. I mean, this is why we play, getting to do stuff like this.
Open stance, and the next delivery is a swing and a high pop-up on the infield. That should be a routine play. The third baseman, the shortstop, going over towards the line and making the catch is the shortstop, Key Lamb. So two men gone. And a fly out and a pop-up.
Two all-star players stood out to the commentators, the players, owners, and spectators alike. One of those players is the starting all-star pitcher, Jeff Dumont, who held the Pacifics without a hit for four innings.
San Francisco Pacifics could not hit the San Quentin pitcher early on.
Yes, Dumont got him 1-2-3 in the first inning.
Yeah. In the second inning, they managed to get a runner aboard, but then a double play wiped that one out.
And the other all-star player.
2-0 delivery coming in there. And a fastball, a fly ball in the short right field. That's going to be a tough play. And the second baseman goes back, makes a brilliant catch, throws to second base for a double play. What a play by Cleo Clement. Wow!
Cleo Clement, that is. For most people there, this was the play of the day. It was a soft flare into short right field, which went over Clomen's head. He ran for the ball, dove, and made an over-the-shoulder catch. Then he rolled over, sprung to his feet, and threw to second base for a double play.
Yeah, the second baseman for you guys made a ridiculous. He needs to call us when he gets out.
And I asked Clomen what this day meant to him.
I feel like a kid in the candy store right now. You know, I get a chance to just really just play the game I love, man, and give it all and leave it on the field. I just wanted to thank God, man, for this blessing, man, just to be around these gentlemen here today.
Both teams pitched a no-hitter for the first four innings. But by the bottom of the ninth inning, the San Quentin All-Stars were losing big, 17-3.
Last opportunity for San Quentin. Two outs, and there's a ground ball hit to third. A nice pitch, easy hop. Throw to second base in time for the force, and the ball game is over.
But the general consensus here today,
it was a success for both teams, I'd say.
But most of the community from the free side of the prison wall was able to see a very different side of the prisoners than what is mostly portrayed in the mainstream media.
You know, again, I came in with a set of expectations of what it was like here in San Quentin, and it's very different than what I thought.
Eugene Luperio is managing partner of the Pacifics.
I'm proud to have brought our team here, and I hope that we do it every year.
The Field of Dreams is one place where the prisoners are not defined by their crimes. Today, they are San Quentin All-Star baseball players. This is Tommy Shakur Ross with the San Quentin Prison Report. I'm out.
Baseball, baby, you better make a home run. The San Quentin Prison Report is a partnership with KALW to bring stories from inside of California's oldest prison to the public radio airwaves.
Last night, can't play ball in the pale moon.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We'll continue our series looking at life behind bars. Bruce Ingleton found out that he was HIV positive in 1998. He says he was engaged in high-risk behavior, both drugs and sex. He's an inmate at San Quentin serving a life sentence. And a note to our listeners, this interview was recorded in the media lab at San Quentin, which is in the old laundry facility, and you can hear the pipes banging every so often. Ingleton told SQPR's Lewis A. Scott about the moment he found out he had HIV.
Well, I had been in high-risk behavior, drugs, illegal sex, and I was testing every year. I came back in 1998, HIV positive.
So you're really unsure about how you went about, how you really contracted?
Either way, you know, drugs and sex go hand-in-hand, so two bad decisions.
Man, describe what it felt like, man, when they first, you first heard positive.
Well, it's an unexpected feeling, you know, and I guess the best way I can describe it is how you go underwater and your ears get to popping, and you can't hear nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like trying to get my bearings back and say, what did you say? And the nurse said, well, you know, you're HIV positive. I'm like, oh, wow. But, yeah, it was a messed up feeling.
Okay, because, you know, there's that stigma where they say, you know, most people contract HIV in prison because either we're shooting dope or we're having unprotected sex.
It's true, but in some instances, you have people that will say that they caught it from a family visit or whatever and then come along that they still doing the same thing, engaging in illicit sex in prison and shooting drugs. Them are the easiest ways to catch it. But I think the most shocking thing that would shock you is I actually seen people shoot somebody else's blood inside them to get HIV.
Wow. For what purpose was that?
I couldn't really answer that because the mindset is really beyond my comprehension after having it. It's like I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. But some of them dudes felt that we had it better behind the type of living conditions we had, because at the time we were getting extra portions and, you know, I don't know. It just, a person's mind, you never know what's on a person's mind.
So but individuals would inject themselves with HIV in order to be quarantined in a certain portion of the prison where HIV patients are housed?
And their opinion at the time, which was if they ever had to go anywhere, they would always go to quote-unquote soft yards.
Well, the individuals doing this, was this individuals with, like, life sentences?
Life without, yeah.
Wow, now the laws have changed, you know. How does one live with that?
Hey, that's a mistake you can't give back, you know. And it was a couple guys that I actually knew and talked to that were short-timers, and that their projected goal was, I could probably get SSI if I get HIV. I said, well, you can all actually die now, too.
Is there anything that you could say or do to prevent other people, make them more aware of HIV and how you contracted the virus and how to prevent, you know,
well,
the spread of it?
If you're thinking about doing something, get it out of your mind, because nobody's going to be honest. You know, it's a form of a person's individual integrity. You know, my integrity was once I caught it, you know, everywhere I went, you know, if you didn't know, and like when I got to Vacaville and I was on the main line, I wasn't, you know, when I first got there, it was segregated, but when I got on the main line, certain homosexuals that knew me, I would tell them automatically I'm HIV positive. Informing anybody about it, you know, in 2014, I mean, you still have the misconceptions that you can catch it from somebody touching you and hugging you in sweat. It's straight uncut. It's blood to blood, you know.
And well, we both know that, yeah, you know, it's a lack of education.
Yeah, it's a lack of education. So no matter how many times you say it, the prejudice is going to be there, you know. It's no fear no more because the medications allow people to live long.
What type of treatment do you take?
Well, I take three different medications twice a day. You know, medications since then have advanced a long ways, you know, but it's basically everybody's individual body that can accept or reject certain medications, and the side effects go along with it, which number from nightmares to rashes to damage to your liver, but it depends on each individual.
Well, brother, you working out? You're looking pretty healthy.
Thank you, and I try to, you know, three or four times a week.
You know, look.
You know, I don't eat meat.
Is that the key?
I don't know if it's the key, but it helps me.
I know that's right, bro. Look, Bruce, thanks for coming in.
All right.
Hey, man, I'm looking forward to seeing you again real soon. I'll catch you on the yard, brother.
All right, you take it easy.
That's Bruce Ingleton, an inmate at San Quentin, speaking with SQPR's Lewis A. Scott. And this is a special edition of Cross Currents from KALW News, bringing you stories from behind the walls of California's oldest prison. I'm Holly Kernan. At San Quentin, about half a dozen men are trained to care for elderly or disabled prisoners. They're called gold coats, and although they're also inmates, these caregivers don't wear the standard prison blues. These gold coats have been working in California prisons for about 5 years in an effort to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act. From SQPR, Tommy Shakur Ross introduces us to one gold coat worker.
Sandy Rashid Lockhart is 35 years old. In 2002, he robbed four men at gunpoint outside of a Walmart store in Lancaster, California. He was arrested, convicted, and sentenced to 24 years in state prison. That time hasn't been easy. He has gotten in trouble for refusing a cellmate, contraband, cell fighting, refusing a direct order, and being involved in a prison riot. Despite that, in 2009, he was entrusted with an extraordinary responsibility.
I've been assisting people with disabilities for about a little over maybe 3 or 4 years. I was doing it at CMC, California Men's County, San Luis Obispo. And what it was down there we worked with guys that had either severe head trauma or mental health issues, and guys that had stuff like severe dementia, Alzheimer's, etc. You know, do some studying on what exactly dementia and Alzheimer's was, what type of symptoms to look for and stuff like that.
But most of his training was on the job.
So, like, for instance, with the guys with dementia and Alzheimer's, basically from the time they get up to the time they go to sleep, we're available to them in their everyday functions. And then basically tucking them back in at the end of the night.
When Rashid arrived at San Quentin in 2012 and appeared before the Unit Classification Committee, they offered him a job similar to the one he had at CMC. San Quentin's program is called the Inmate Disability Assistant Program, IDAP. IDAP workers wear distinguishing gold smocks that contrast with the standard blue shirts and jeans that other prisoners wear. Hence, they are also referred to as gold coats. They are permitted to basically roam the prison and perform some of their duties. There are a total of 7 IDAP workers at San Quentin.
The gold coats, we have to be accessible to almost all areas of the prison where inmates are allowed to go, because you never know what we might be needed for, you know, as far as helping a guy in a wheelchair. He might have to go from one end of the institution to the next. So what they've done is they've put up signs everywhere with our pictures saying, you know, these are the IDAP workers, and so that way they know when we come through, oh, okay, he's with the program.
Rashid says the job is mostly mundane.
We're making sure that guys get to where they need to be at on time, take care of the everyday things that they need to take care of, like making sure that they, you know, clean their bed areas up and stuff like that.
Or like going to get their laundry or helping with canteen purchases.
You know, obviously if they're in a wheelchair, they can't carry the canteen. So what we do is we go with them and assist them and help, you know, carry that type of stuff.
Rashid says his work here at San Quentin is different than his former job at CMC. The work there was much more intimate, like with one elderly dementia patient named Bob.
Now, I remember one morning I walked into a cell and I smelled something. I was like, man, what the hell is that, right? And I was like, oh, man, I already know what time it is, because he had some issues with his bowels. And he gets up and I'm like, come on, buddy, we got to get up. It's time to go, right? And the main thing with him was keeping him from wanting to touch stuff, because he always wanted to touch, you know. That was how he identified with things. So I had to bring it to his attention without really letting him know what was going on, because if I did, then he'd want to touch it. And from there on, it's a high-risk situation, you know, keeping him from touching it, touching his face, you know. Okay. And when I say it, I'm talking about, you know, crap, fecal matter. I get him up, and right off the bat, he knows. He says, you smell that? I was like, yeah, I smell it, buddy. Let me check you out. So I checked the front of his boxers, checked the back. And I had turned away for a second, man. As soon as I turned back, man, he had a handful of crack, right? And I was just like, damn. So I'm telling him, hey, buddy, you can't do that, right? And he looks at me and he goes, man, did I do that? I said, yeah, you did that, buddy. And he goes, shit, I'm f***ed up, ain't I? Wow. I say, no, buddy, you all right.
Yeah.
And he tells me, thank you. You know what I mean? And for me, that kind of solidifies what I do. You know, when he looks at me and says, thank you. You know what I mean? Anything else is irrelevant at that point.
I asked him what it feels like to do this type of work.
I can't begin to explain what it feels like to sit there with somebody and you can see the frustration on their face that they're forgetting stuff, that, you know what I mean, they're able to acknowledge that their mind is slipping.
The job pays a mere $56 a month, but Rashid is okay with that. He says his biggest payoff is that serving others has given his life new meaning.
I didn't really know what humility was until I was able to help a grown man change his boxers or get in and out of the shower, have to get in there with the rag and wash his nuts for him. So I didn't know what it was like to have to sit there and allow a man to chew me out and call me all kinds of names, yeah, right, just in the hopes that I can still be effective in his life. You know, I didn't know what humility was until I got put in those situations. So it's humbled me.
He also learned some things about himself that he had not known prior to working with ailing prisoners.
It's taught me that I love to be in service to people. You know what I mean? That I think I have a calling in that regard, right? I mean, I've never really cared about anybody else. I mean, I've always been selfish, so now I feel like, you know, being a servitude fulfills something within me. You know what I mean? And it gives me purpose. Like, I look forward to getting up, running over, and picking my guys up. You know what I mean? Getting them going, making sure that they're up and ready to go to chow.
Unfortunately, Rashid's job as an IDAP worker didn't last. He approached me during post-production of the story and informed me that he pled guilty to a serious rule violation. He was caught in possession of a cell phone. Consequently, he was fired. I asked him, why would he jeopardize a job that was so important to him? He told me that his grandfather was dying and he needed to mend relationships with his family. I'm Tommy Shakur Ross with the San Quentin Prison Report. I'm out.
Cell phones are not allowed for use by inmates in California prisons. They're considered contraband. Inmates are permitted to make 15-minute collect phone calls from payphones only. You've been listening to a special edition of Cross Currents from KALW News, produced with inmates from San Quentin.
The San Quentin Prison Report is produced by founding director Troy Williams and managing director Nigel Poor. SQPR is made possible by the support of Warden Kevin Chappelle, Public Information Officer Lieutenant Sam Robinson, and television specialist Larry Schneider.
The Cross Currents team includes Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Jen Chien, Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Daphne Matsiaraki, Mary Reese, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Rachel Wong. Our line producers today are Audrey Dilling and Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thanks to you, we can proudly say we are independent, listener-supported, local public radio. KALW's public radio party starts tomorrow. You're listening to Bay Area guitarist Johnny Harper. Harper and his band Carnival are playing Saturday at St. Cyprian's Church in San Francisco. Music begins about 8 p.m. You'll find all of that information along with more local music and more local stories at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.
On Monday morning it began to rain. Around the bend there come a passenger train. All the rides was old hobo.